I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, listener. Just thought I'd quickly explain the reason why you're about to have the show that you are on your podcast feed. As the majority of you know, I create a whole load of podcasts. Apart from Mid-Atlantic, I also produce a podcast entitled Friday 15, where I interview friends and interesting people about quite random topics. Last Friday, I interviewed Dave Smith, an English guy who had been over to America last year to go on the presidential trail to discover how exactly you become the president of the United States. Quite simply, the subject matter of that show overlaps so much with Mid-Atlantic that I thought it'd be worthwhile to share that show with you on this feed. Let's get on with the show.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both. Today we speak to Dave Smith, who went to America to see just how you become the President of the United States. Always Be There is a searing track on Remedy, the debut studio album by the English electronic music duo Basement Jaxx. It was released in 1999.
Oh, Last year, you went to America with a very important question on your mind. It was how to become a president. How do you become the president of the United States?
Well, I think the really interesting thing about it is it's totally different. It is totally different to how you become, say, prime minister in the United Kingdom. And there's this, you kind of uncover when you look into it, this whole story which relates to a whole load of different places, so very kind of specific geographies, and a whole load of different processes that come together to just tell this wonderful soap opera, quite frankly, about how people first get the nomination of their party to be president and then go on and run their general election campaign. So that's what I was really interested in. I think it's a wonderful story that emerges from this, and why I was going out there was to try and create a podcast around, you know, exactly the different steps of how you become president, to give people really the kind of the background understanding of all the different bits and how they interweave so that they can read for themselves the wonderful kind of stories that come out of it.
I've now completely and utterly made sense of the places that you went to. You went to New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina and DC. How long did you spend over in the States? How did you get to those various different states? And tell us the reasons why those areas are so important to telling that story.
So I wasn't there a huge amount of time. I was only there about 10 days, and this was a couple of weeks before the in kind of October time, so just before the election. And the reason I picked those is because these places are so pertinent, really, to the story of how you become president. So Iowa, for example, is first in the nation, first place in the country that votes in the Iowa caucus for people to select their party nominee. So I went to Iowa and spoke to both people in Des Moines, very kind of urban area, and then out into these cornfields that just go on for miles and miles and miles, and talking to the rural farmers of Iowa. The second place in the nation that votes traditionally is New Hampshire, very different state to Iowa, on the East Coast, renowned for being kind of socially liberal but economically quite conservative. And there I went to an incredible building, which is an old hotel that they're doing up called Dixville Notch. And the reason I went there is in New Hampshire, they have a rule which says you can close the polling station if 100% of the people in that polling district have voted already. And this is such a tiny, tiny place that there's only 10 people or 11 people or so who are on the voter register. So what they do by tradition is they open the poll at 1 minute past midnight, and everybody lines up and votes. All 11 people get there and vote. And then they close it at 3 minutes past midnight. And that way they can announce their result first before anybody else in the state, and a huge number of camera crews go and cover it. So it's called the first in the state of the first in the nation. So that was a really interesting bit about New Hampshire. South Carolina is the third one that the candidates have to stump to. So, I mean, if you imagine if you're trying to build an electoral coalition, you go to rural Iowa, then you go to the kind of eastern seaboard, New Hampshire, then you go down to the deep south in South Carolina, looking at the issues around identity politics and race politics. And we actually start the story there because when I was younger than I am now, sadly, I went out and did some volunteering on the Obama campaign in 2008. And the reason I went out was because I heard him give his victory speech in South Carolina. And so I found out where it was he'd given this speech. It's in a conference center in Columbia. So I went there to kind of meet the guys who ran that event, because it had such a big impact on my life. And then you can't not really finish without going to Washington, D.C. and see the, you know, both the physical but also the kind of social structure of what the new president is going to walk into. And it becomes particularly interesting with someone like Donald Trump, of course, who's never held elective office before. And that sense of an outsider coming to Washington was something I kind of, you know, you experience as being an Englishman abroad there. So I like to think it gave us a really good oversight. I think we've got some really good bits of the story coming together through those four particular places.
So obviously going to New Hampshire, Iowa and South Carolina, you are trodding the trail, as you said, of US potential presidential candidates on the primary trail. What specifically did you learn maybe about the 26th election going to those places? What did you learn about America? What did you uncover?
The really interesting thing for me, I think, from kind of our point of view, looking at the story from a British point of view, trying to understand it, is I think a lot of us have a view of the US which is based primarily on going over there. And when British people tend to go, they will go to New York first and foremost, possibly Orlando second, possibly if they go back a third time, California. And actually, that's a really unreflective view of vast, vast swathes of the country. A lot of it is rural, a lot of it is poor. I don't think that's an image we always kind of necessarily get on our TV sets or on the experiences we have when we travel over there. So it's really interesting to engage with that. And in relation to the 2016 election, what it taught me was, you know, I wouldn't lie about this and claim credit for prescience, which I didn't have. But I would just say that I was far less surprised by the Trump victory than some people were. I still thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, but you could see it building. You could kind of see it coming.
So you said that you felt... and you weren't surprised by the Trump victory. Did you encounter any of the respective party teams on the ground? How were they trying to get the vote out? How were they canvassing for their candidates?
Yeah, we did. So when we were in Des Moines, we went to see Bernie Sanders speak on behalf of Hillary Clinton. He was at Drake University there, so he was obviously sent out to encourage young people and get out the vote there. But what I found really particularly interesting about that was they did this event at like 11 o'clock in the morning on a kind of a Tuesday. And it had nothing to do really at all with being a rally in terms of getting undecideds there. You could tell that the only reason they were doing it was they packed it with, you know, diehard Democrats. And that way, that evening, they got nonstop news coverage across Iowa about Bernie Sanders was in the state. So I think the interesting thing about US geography compared to British geography is because it's so vast, what you're trying to do more than anything else is play into local media markets, which we just don't really have in the... I mean, we have BBC London and BBC East Anglia and stuff, but it's not quite the same, I don't think. So it was really interesting to observe how the campaign would use surrogates, go into an area, but not actually use them to kind of talk to real voters or real undecided voters, but use them in a way of getting into local media markets to try and hit as many... No TV stations as they can ahead of the big day.
So obviously with the victory of Donald Trump, what he did was tap into blue collar America. Tell us exactly where you saw this kind of nascent kind of Trumpism.
I saw it in a whole number of places. I think the one that stands out for me the most was again when I was in Iowa. I decided to drive out of Des Moines, which is a very urban and quite liberal city, down to a small town about an hour and a half kind of southwest of it called Creston, which is a proper kind of blue-collar town. And on the way there, I needed some petrol, and so I had to wait. I pulled into...
Petrol? Don't you mean gas?
Exactly, gas, yeah. And I had that problem at the gas station, needless to say, as well. But I pulled in there...
At the gas station?
Well, I said to him, have you got any petrol? And he looked at me like I was from another planet.
No, I thought you were telling me that you're in the sealed confines of the car, you had a lot of gas, and that would have been terrible for your passenger.
Yeah, no, mercifully we're right on that front. Although, when you're in the South, they did ask me what flavour burrito I wanted for breakfast, which is a question I never thought I'd get asked, quite frankly. So I went into this casino, which was there as well, and talking to some of the staff who were in there... and all of them just saying, you know, you say to them, who are you voting for? And they'd look at you and they'd say it consciously quieter than how they were talking to you before. They'd say, oh, you know, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. I think he's what we need.
Obviously, one of the kind of doyens, one of the icons of America, of Americans' blue collar, is Bruce Springsteen. Tell us the reason why you decided to go for the track The Rising.
Well, I mean, it's a fascinating track, I think, that one. He actually wrote it on the back of 9/11. One of the images he said that really stayed with him was this idea of a firefighter running into the flames and then, you know, not being able to see behind him or ahead of him. And I think in many ways it is a country still that is trying to deal with the fallout of that. And my view of it is that many people, as much as you might dislike some of their politics and some of their sentiment, are trying to work through a whole series of issues which... immigration and the effects of 9/11 also have brought up for them, and responding to it in different ways. I think it's a country that is asking itself some very, very serious questions about how it responds to the changing nature of its role in the world, but also moving away from communities which for a very long time have been localized, have been a fundamental part of their economy, now are becoming the middle class. So what I also like about that song is I think it's quite hopeful, and I think both sides felt in their candidates, less so the Democrats when Bernie Sanders ceased to be a part of it. But within the Trump side, I think it's easy for us to forget sometimes that it felt like a rising, it felt quite joyous. I don't want to use the word progressive, but for people on people who were going out to vote for him did so with a huge amount of enthusiasm. It wasn't done with a kind of a cynicism that you might associate with his politics. So I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. I think he is a wonderful poet when he talks about the American working and middle class. And it just seemed particularly apt and certainly reminds me of a lot of the people I met on that trip.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile of line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up, lay your hands in line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up for the rising tonight. Left the house this morning. Bells are ringing through the air. I was wearing the cross of my car.
Travelling to New Hampshire, to Iowa, South Carolina, and then ending up in DC. I suppose you kind of encountered a lot of regional music whilst you were playing the radio. Could you tell us a little bit about that, Dave?
I did, yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the car driving around. Do you know what? Not only the music, but the talk shows over there are incredible as well. You know, something that we don't quite have the similar side of in the UK. And then a lot of religious music that comes in from that as well. But it's standard pop music as well. I mean, one of the songs that I remember that was played regularly when I was there at the time was the relatively newish still Pink song called Fire or something. I can't remember precise words, but that always makes me think of it as well. But I think one of the great things about being in the US and driving to these different places, it gives you a lot of time in the car and preparing a good kind of soundtrack for that really heightens the experience of it.
Before we went into a break, you talked about discovering or uncovering interesting questions about identity politics. Could you go into a little bit more detail? How exactly are you defining that?
Well, what I just think is really interesting about it, and you can see it in different ways in both the Trump campaign and the Hillary campaign, is I think people's politics more and more is shaped less by the kind of standard deviations of class and things like that, and the different aspects of themselves. So, you know, not only their race, but their sexuality, their gender identity, amongst the youth vote particularly, their conception of other people their age, and casting their votes in, or rather on the basis of how they wish to relate to other people. So some people's conception of identity politics is my identity is something that I need to protect, and therefore I need to close myself and my community off from others. Whereas other people's sense of identity is one which is based on you know, liberation and being embraced and accepted by others, and therefore is far more outward looking. So I thought one of the really interesting things about the election was it wasn't the economy stupid, it was in many, many ways, how do these people relate to my identity as an individual, and how does kind of society accept that?
So I know that on your American Odyssey, you bumped into somebody who's pretty important in the relatively recent history of American politics, somebody that who'd stood to become president. Who was that, and how did you get to meet him?
So we spoke to Michael Dukakis, who was for a long time the governor of Massachusetts, and then ran in the 1988 election. He was a Democratic candidate who ran against George Bush Senior and lost that year. And he is a fascinating guy. That I don't know, you probably remember, Royfield, that election was fascinating for a whole number of issues. One of them particularly was this famous Willie Horton ad.
I do remember.
Dukakis was, you know, kind of just the most kind of blatant example of racist campaigning I think you'll ever see, with this story about this guy who was on temporary release from prison and went out and raped and murdered somebody. And subsequently, they ran this whole video footage of, you know, black men walking in and out of prison and looking up at the camera and making eye contact. And then he was asked about it in the debate and supposedly gave a very, you know, overly calm and robotic answer to it. So he's a fascinating guy. I was very lucky. I wrote to him and asked to speak to him, and he agreed to have a chat with me about it. And we covered a huge number of things. And I really left that interview more than, and they were all really enjoyable ones to do, but with him just thinking, well, what a loss to history that man really was in many ways. But he's still very involved in politics, particularly again in teaching universities and getting young people actively involved.
So you went to America, you saw America, real America, you felt Trump coming, and you kind of came back. Tell me about the podcast that you put together on the back of this.
So it's going to have 10 episodes, I think. It's going to focus on all the different key parts of the story. So we'll have one on the Iowa caucus, what that looks like, one on the New Hampshire primary, what that's like, one on South Carolina, one on the debates, which I think is going to be particularly interesting. How do people prepare for the debates? One on the convention, and a whole series of things through to the election itself, and you know, the ground game and how the campaign organizes across the country on the day. They're going to be, I don't know, we're looking at the length of them at the minute, because I think there's some really interesting detail and stories to tell here. And there's an interesting question about when's the best time to bring this out as well. I don't want it to be something that we wait for the next election cycle for. I think it's a story that people can enjoy at any time, really. And particularly with this current president and the way things are going, we might necessarily not have to wait until 4 years' time until we get another new one.
Dave, quickly, just before we go, you can tell us the name of this podcast so people can go up and find it. What's it going to be called?
I can. It's simply called How to Become President of the United States, produced by myself and my friend with E14 Productions. And I very much hope that when it's done and dusted and finally ready, Royfield, I can come back and talk to you about it a bit again and put it out there.
Listen, I look forward to that. Dave Smith, thank you for coming on to Friday 15.
Thanks ever so much.
Perfect. That was good, man.
Oh, was that all right?
Yeah, shut your cake hole.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Number one for 6 consecutive weeks on the Billboard Hot 100, Call Me, is a song by the American new wave band Blondie and the theme of the 1980 film American Gigolo. Over You reached number 11 in the UK singles charts in 1974. It was featured on the 7th studio album by Jamaican reggae recording artist Ken Booth.
Shame.
show, don't forget you can follow the show's progress on Facebook by simply typing in Friday 15. You can also find us on Twitter, where you can follow me, where I'm at Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. Now, every Thursday, you can jump onto Twitter and tweet me and nominate a song for me to put into this week's Friday 15. iTunes reviews, folks, are extremely important. They're the lifeblood of any podcast. Please go onto iTunes and write us a glowing review. And don't forget, finally, you can email me, where I'm Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D, @gmail.com. See you all again in 7 days' time for more good music and great conversation.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.